You're listening to Bison Report Radio.
It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond wants to play this in terms of what he does. If he does want to go out and try to get some immediate help there.
The man, the myth, the legend, Greg Menard, rushing the passer from his right end position as a senior, and I think a legitimate National Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio from Scout.com. Here's your hosts, Ryan Burns and Ross Uglum.
And welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. This is our breakdown edition of some NDSU football, some NDSU basketball action. We also get a little recruiting time with some recruiting news, unfortunately going in the wrong direction for NDSU as signing day approaches here. But joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Ross Uglum. Ross, how are you? How is it being a Packer fan right now? And how is life knowing that you are going to be a married man here within the next 18 months?
It's been interesting. We talked a little bit in the pre-production meeting. You know, it's been great. My fiance is pretty outstanding. Very stress-free wedding planning, and excited to be a little bit more responsible moving forward. As far as, you know, pro ball, it's exciting. It's tough, because you never know whether or not you really want to kind of believe in a season like this. But at the same time, why not? It's fun to think about the potential of another run-the-table type season and a playoff run. And as we saw last year, you know, you just never know what might happen during an Aaron Rodgers playoff run.
Absolutely. So let's switch over and talk some NDSU football. But first, let's talk a little bit about the FCS playoffs thus far. You kind of look across the FCS board over the last weekend. You look at NDSU's next opponent, which we will be getting into a little bit later this week in Wofford. They beat Furman 28-10. But you also have to look across and see that the two teams that were ranked above NDSU in the coaches and media poll in Central Arkansas and Jacksonville State, they are no longer in the playoffs. So when you look across what happened over the weekend, what are some of your takeaways, Mr. Uglum?
Well, certainly I think, you know, we talked about it a little bit in the pre-production meeting. You have to wonder just how much this will affect voters moving forward. And what we mean by that, of course, is just that, NDSU, you can talk about, Bison fatigue is a phrase that we didn't coin, but a phrase that we use. Coaches, media, et cetera, just being a little bit disrespectful towards North Dakota State and doing kind of anything they can to push the Bison down if they have the opportunity. And we saw, you know, potentially here that that's not exactly accurate. In what I guess has happened to both Jacksonville State and to University of Central Arkansas, it's tough to make excuses for those schools based on kind of honestly based on the performance that they put in the second round, the performance that they put forth. I just think was underwhelming. And, you know, maybe it'll give voters pause next time before they get so excited to jam NDSU down their rankings the next time they drop a conference game in the FCS's top conference.
Yeah, so you look at NDSU. It'll be NDSU versus Wofford this weekend. If they're able to win that matchup, we're looking at either Sam Houston State or Kennesaw State in the semifinals. So, again, we'll have to see what happens this weekend with Wofford. But let's talk about the press conference you attended yesterday, Ross. Coach Kleiman holding his weekly Monday press conference. What were some of your takeaways, and did we get any injury updates?
Yeah, a few. I asked him specifically about Jalen Allison. After a guy gets a concussion, you always want to pay attention to see, you know, whether or not this was first documented concussion, the second documented concussion. It's important. It's important to note, you know, when, or I guess not necessarily when, but how many of these things that guys have had, because that will generally affect whether or not they're going to be able to safely and properly respond within a week and be able to play that following week. Asked about Levi Jorheim, seems like they not only feel like he might be involved, but feel like it's going to be important for what they're potentially doing. And also checked in on Lance Dunn, basically got nothing. Was definitely told, though, that he has a doctor's appointment this week and that it'll be important moving forward what they find out during that appointment. But at this time, I just think that they're mostly expecting Dunn to not play until at least the national championship game, should NDSU be fortunate enough to make it there. The Jordan injury looks like it's moving forward. The Allison injury, best case scenario news, of course, is that it was first concussion, which it was. And, other than that, really, Dom Davis would be the only injury you're trying to pay attention to moving forward. Dom Davis was not listed on the 2-deep for this upcoming game. I would probably not anticipate him being ready for Wofford. And this probably not a week where you would use a ton of Dom Davis in a run-heavy scheme. I think they'd want their tacklers, Jalen Allison and Jalen Wimbush, playing those corner spots.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about recruiting. I'm sure folks, if you've been monitoring social media, you've seen that there's been a couple of decommitments for the NDSU football class here as we are 15 days away from signing day. So what's happened since we've last spoken is Iowa State offered then NDSU linebacker committed at the time, Chandler Pulvermacher. He is then flipped to the Cyclones, the Fighting Matt Campbells. And then also Riley Moss, again, I believe I talked about him last week, is one of the best, I thought, NDSU commits, has flipped to Iowa on a gray shirt offer. So I believe the gray shirt, if I remember everything correctly here, is he will have to walk on this fall, but then he will be on scholarship there for the remaining 4 years. So that's an unfortunate break for NDSU, as again, with that early signing period, there are going to be more and more Power 5 schools kind of looking around with the amount of success that NDSU has had. So when we want to look at other, a few potential names to look at, so let's talk linebacker first. I mean, we have already talked about Logan Klemp on this show, someone we've got a story up with as well, an Iowa linebacker that could also play tight end, someone that has visited NDSU. I know that he just took an official visit to Iowa last week, and they did not offer him a gray shirt as far as I know, so I would look for Klemp to potentially be up here in the next couple weeks. And so for guys who don't have offers as well, two guys that, per sources that come to mind, are Eden Prairie linebacker Antonio Montero, someone that I think is up there to be in consideration for one of the best linebackers in the state of Minnesota. He had a fantastic senior season, very instinctual, very plays a lot faster than he runs, in my opinion. And then Creighton Durham Hall athlete Jackson Crawford, another guy that led his team to the state tournament, someone that is very athletic. So we're going to have to see what NDSU decides to do there. And then when you look into the defensive backs, one name that I have been told to watch is Minnetonka defensive back Nehemiah Montague. Someone that has a South Dakota offer, I believe. He has mentioned to me that he's got a bunch of in-home visits coming up. He's going to start to try setting official visits here soon. So those are three names that I think we should be monitoring here very closely. And once again, I posted all that on the Bison Report here earlier on Tuesday. So if you want to have the latest and greatest before the podcast comes out, I would recommend subscribing. So Ross, with that being said, I think we should probably talk a little bit about NDSU hoops. And you look at this game that happened over the weekend, yesterday, a 71-58 loss. Unfortunately, NDSU couldn't really get things going in the second half. So you watched the game, obviously. So what were some of your takeaways from this game yesterday?
Just that North Dakota State is a high upside team. I know it sounds optimistic, but that's the second consecutive game that they've really battled Missouri State. Had a 53-52 lead late in the second half, didn't do a lot offensively after that, but it's a team that they'd already beaten yet this year. It's a team that absolutely went down and destroyed South Dakota State University, the top pick in the Summit League. I'm not going to use the transitive property of basketball, but that's the level of team Missouri State is. NDSU scheduled itself into these problems. Talk about being 3-5 and having a level of concern. I might have a little bit more level of concern if they go to Grand Forks and lose a game, but up until now, the only bad loss is Santa Barbara, and they definitely have a good win as far as, you know, going into Missouri State and winning that game. This is a team that has really welcomed the competition. They've suffered a bit, I think, in the record standpoint because of bringing on the competition. But when that Summit League season rolls around, they're not going to see a lot of squads that have the same level of ability that Missouri State does.
No, and one of the guys you kind of want to mention here is Elise Johnson. I mean, 21-10 yesterday, and just a bigger concern for me, I guess, would be you look at what Missouri State did to NDSU on the boards. Elise has 10 by himself. The team for Missouri State has 42 overall, and then you look on the flip side of things, NDSU is out-rebounded by 16 at home. They never really had anything for Elise Johnson all game, and so does that give you any pause?
No, Alize Johnson had three NBA scouts in the gym last night, or I guess would have had three NBA scouts. And I don't know. I didn't pay attention to if they actually showed up because of the weather. There was a blizzard basically in Fargo, but I was told that three NBA scouts were going to be there to watch Alize Johnson. And if they were there, they saw everything that they would possibly need. That right hook over left shoulder is a beautiful move. He showed the three-point range that he's going to need at the next level. Looked at, just because I'm a hapless Bulls fan, had a chance to look at and kind of check out the mock draft this morning by Chad Ford. They've got Alize Johnson as I think pick number 41, so the 11th pick of the second round. Very impressive for the young man from Missouri State, the senior forward who was formerly at a junior college. As far as rebounding, from a height and athleticism standpoint, NDSU was overmatched last night. Missouri State is bigger, they are taller, and they are more athletic. There's no question about it. NDSU obviously can find ways to beat a team like that. They did so in Springfield, Missouri earlier. But last night, you said, you know, like you said, the rebounding difference was remarkable. I mean, you could definitely tell that they were the bigger squad, and I definitely was impressed by Reggie Scurry. You know, that's a guy that North Dakota State heavily recruited, and frankly, you could definitely see that he's a guy that could have helped NDSU specifically last night. I think he would have been probably the top big man on the roster from an offensive standpoint going into this season. I think he was that impressive. Not the tallest guy in the world, but a thick body, a good jumper, and really some nice moves offensively that you just don't get from Miller and Eliason. Both Miller and Eliason hustle. They both play defense and are going to be useful players for North Dakota State moving forward, but they just don't offer what Scurry does offensively, and you can absolutely tell why Coach Richmond was in on Reggie Scurry.
Absolutely, you can. So let's talk a little bit about Paul Miller. You look at Paul last night, he's got 16 points, but you kind of look at over the last few games here, you have Paul Miller in his last three games, 6 of 21 from deep. Just hasn't been able to kind of find his stroke. So, I mean, are we a little bit concerned about Peace Move right now?
I mean, I think certain things have to be done. I think certain things have to be done to make the game easier for Paul Miller. And at the same time, I think certain things have to be done by Paul Miller to play better. People will remember that 2013 NDSU team for a long, long time. Taylor Braun, Trayvon Wright, Marshall Bjorklund, perhaps the best NDSU basketball team that there's ever been. Following that season, there's a lot of pessimism and potentially a lot of understandable pessimism. But, you know, you get to the point where before that season, you're saying, you know, they could make a run. All they really need is Lawrence Alexander to take that next step and really play like a Summit League Player of the Year level guy. And that's what they needed. That's what they got. He did. He played. He was named Summit League Player of the Year. And because of that, NDSU was able to lean on some younger players, compete in the Summit League, either be the number one or the number two seed moving into the tournament. That is currently escaping me which one it was, but ultimately win the tournament. And if you look at that Summit League championship game, it wasn't all LA, you know, but he, during the season, raised his game to a level of play that is commensurate with being a top level guy in the league. And Miller needs to be, you know, that level player. Is he going to be Summit League Player of the Year? Probably not. I would put my money on Mike Dahmer of South Dakota State. I think he has the media behind him. He's an excellent player. He's going to have a down year not to win that award. But Paul Miller has to play at that level. And right now, shooting the ball 38% from the field and 32% from three, including 1-for-8 against Mississippi State and a bunch of big misses last night. He's got to elevate his level of play. I think there are a number of things North Dakota State can do to facilitate that. Number one being move him off the ball. But he just has to get to that level that he was at the middle of the year last year. And it might have to be from a lack of pressing. He might need to put less pressure on himself than the pressure that I just put on him to be great.
All right, so when we kind of look forward here, we have a couple of games to kind of look at here in the next week. We talked about it in the pre-production meeting. NDSU will head up to Grand Forks to take on North Dakota this Saturday, 7 p.m., and then they'll return home on Tuesday to take on Valley City State. So when we kind of look moving forward here, three straight losses for NDSU. Again, we'll talk about this a little bit more on Thursday, Friday, but, I mean, do you think this game, how important is this game coming up against the Fighting Hawks?
It's critical. You pencil in the win against Valley City State. That makes you 4-5. Obviously, that game's second. But, I mean, you want to be a 500 basketball team as soon as you can. And I definitely think that the sooner that happens, the better, which means that the win against North Dakota becomes really big and something that you have to hope happens on Saturday. Plus, North Dakota just doesn't have that impressive of a resume so far. And if you're going to be the team that you want to be, you're not going to lose four straight games. You're not going to lose to your in-state rival. That's kind of a one-man show in Geno Crandall after losing Drick Bernstein, after losing Quentin Hooker to graduation. They are not at the level that North Dakota State is. I know they were in the NCAA tournament last year, but a lot of Summit League teams would have won the Big Sky a season ago. NDSU has to win that game to, I think, kind of continue to feel good about what they're doing from a long-term perspective.
Absolutely. Sorry. Let's switch on over to finally talk about this 38-3 win on Saturday. And again, Ross alerted this to me in the pre-production meeting. These playoff mustaches are absolutely something to behold. So if you haven't been on social media to see some of these guys and what their attempt at a mustache looks like, it is it's quite remarkable. I'll put it in those terms. So it is playoff mustache time, Ross, and NDSU is able to get it done 38-3 at home.
Absolutely. I think Nick DeLuca's got one rocking right now. I think Tangways is absolutely outstanding. The playoff mustache is real. And I just want to call on NDSU fans really around Fargo to join the playoff mustache fun. I'd like to see, you know, I'd love to see 18,000 mustaches on Saturday afternoon. I think that would be great.
Absolutely. So let's talk about this game a little bit. When you look at the first two drives for each team, NDSU's defense gets off the field in four plays in the first drive, three plays in the second drive, and the offense is able to put two touchdowns on the board on their first two drives. So that is absolutely the way that you want to start a game, wouldn't you agree?
Well, for sure. And, you know, they said that yesterday. Coach Kleiman said that at the press conference. They had been off. And of course, they'd been off. I mean, it was Thanksgiving weekend. They were a seeded team. But I think it's important, you know, that
they got off to the fast start against San Diego because they're going to want to get off to a fast start against Wofford. That might sound dumb because, yes, you do. You want to get off to a fast start against every team. But against a triple option squad like Wofford, you want to have the lead. You want to force the opposition into passing the ball as much as possible. And I think as you look forward, you have to appreciate the effort that they were able to put in to get on the board quickly, to script the offense kind of the way that they did, and really get on top of San Diego in a way that I think, you know, the visiting crowd, the players, the coaching staff, I think they knew. I really do. I think that they knew that it was probably over right there in the first quarter, though they would never admit that.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't, but again, 17-0 very, very quickly in that game. And then NDSU comes out to start the second half and really puts the pedal to the metal. Their first three drives in the second half, three touchdowns. So let's talk a little bit about the defense to start. And you have to start with Nate Tangway. Nick DeLuca both have two tackles for loss. DeLuca adds two sacks as well, an interception. Both were battling injuries here earlier in the season, Ross, but it certainly looks like they are getting very, very close to that 100% mark right around playoff time.
Yeah, I thought, you know, if there was anything that was important about what happened on Saturday, the number one thing for me was just how far along in their rehabilitation it looked like Tangway and DeLuca were. This was as fluid as I've seen both of them move. It was as explosive as I've seen Tangway all season. You haven't really seen that signature Nate Tangway play. And what I mean by that is, you know, flying between the center and the guard, creating a huge penetration into the backfield, redirecting the running back. You know, I mean, those types of plays, splitting of the double team or manhandling a one-on-one situation, that's what you've come to expect from Nate Tangway. And because of his knee injury, not only has that not happened as much, but there just haven't been as many snaps, period. So I think it's very important to pay attention to how many reps these guys get moving forward, and especially that two-week break leading up to the game again. Well, actually, it's 2 weeks off, so it's a three-week between game break leading up to the national championship game in Frisco, Texas. And if they can get those knees drained, if they can, you know, get in the rehab room and really get 100% and be completely unleashed in that national championship game, it could be a game breaker against James Madison, against whoever you know, may come down the pike to play that game in Frisco.
And I know that we've talked about this off the air before, and it was kind of in a joking sense. When you kind of look at the Fargo South running back class back in the day, the two names, James Johannesson, he goes to Minnesota, Ty Brooks, he comes to NDSU. And I know that we've joked that it certainly looks like NDSU got the better of the two, and I don't know that there's much of an argument to be made now. Johannesson is now up at UND. He's not getting a whole lot of carries, while Ty Brooks is excelling. 18 carries, 88 yards, and a touchdown. This certainly has been, in the last six or seven games, Ross, the Ty Brooks coming out party, and he continues to party all night long, just like he did against San Diego.
He's been exceptional. I think if you really want to get excited about the kid's potential, pay attention specifically to the play that was called back. That was the most impressive thing I think I've seen him ever do. The speed that he utilized during that play, I mean, you know, we've called it a blur, but it really was. He accelerates through cuts in a way that you just don't see at the FCS level or really any level. I've never seen a guy change direction with that level of speed, and it's just, like I said, it's so impressive to me. But I just wanted to point out that play specifically, something that might not make it into a ton of highlight videos because it was called back for penalty, but definitely just to watch him, man, I mean, he is really, really impressive athletically. I know from a size perspective, he might not be the biggest guy in the world, but wow, he's impressive.
He certainly is. And when you look at another guy, again, for the brand of this show, Bruce Anderson, 14 carries, 112 yards, 8 yards a carry for him. Where would you put this in your mind? Again, we've had a pretty good sample size in terms of football terms of Bruce Anderson. Where would you put this effort for Bruce at tailback in comparison to some of his other games throughout his career?
I thought as number one tailback, this is the best game that Bruce Anderson's put on film. Definitely some plays in the kick return game, some plays in the receiving game that have maybe led to bigger overall games for Bruce Anderson. But as far as just being the man, being the number one tailback, I thought this was his best game. Not forcing the A-gap, not running into blockers, creating yards where there may not be yards, and then also taking what's given to him. I mean, just top to bottom, I was so impressed with what he was able to do. I just very impressed. I thought, without question, for me, this was the best game I had seen from Bruce from top to bottom as the number one tailback. And I think it's a pleasant thing to think about moving forward if you're a Bison fan. And B, I think it's incredibly important to pay attention to as you think about potentially getting a Lance Dunn back and the way that they can use both of those guys with what they've now found in Ty Brooks.
Absolutely. So let's switch back on over to the defensive side of the ball. Another thing that I know you're very impressed with was the secondary. You look at some of the guys appearing near the top of the total tackle leaders. You have Robbie Grimsley with 5, Jalen Wimbush with 5, Trey Dempsey with 4. This was a very good tackling group against the San Diego team on Saturday.
And it's going to be important moving forward, playing against Wofford. Playing against a triple option, it's going to be super important. I don't think there's any question about that. You know, Marquise Bridges, I pointed out in a Vine on Twitter. You guys will have that upon film review. That should be up actually probably before this is published, so you'll get a chance to look at that. But, man, even Marquise Bridges, who is a wide receiver convert, was tackling at a really high level on Saturday. Jalen Allison tackling at a level that I don't think you're going to see a ton of number one cover corners tackle at. And that's not just a thing that you notice against San Diego. That's something that's been going on all season long. It's something that has been impressive all season long, and something, you know, that I hope people have been paying attention to, because, man, he's been tackling really, really well, especially when you compare it to, you know, NFL guys, whatever, doesn't matter, NFL, high-level NCAA, usually your number one cover corner is not a guy who wants to tackle a ton. It's a guy who wants to make a lot of interceptions. It's a guy that wants to make plays. It's a guy that wants to get past his defense, but not a guy that wants to come up on 3rd and 6 and make a huge tackle after a 5-yard gain.
Another guy I know that you want to touch on here is James Hendricks. You look at his day, 3 tackles, but again, there may be some injury things there. So what did you see from Mr. Hendricks?
Yeah, interesting to me, just in that North Dakota State did not use James Hendricks basically at all until the Jalen Allison injury. And then they had to use Robbie Grimsley at nickel corner and bring in James Hendricks. It just was interesting to me. And if you go back and you watch the first half of that game, pay attention to how often you see number 6 on the field. And so moving forward, it'll be interesting to see when they do and don't utilize Hendricks in preparation for a potential national championship matchup with a spread offense. Hendricks, it has been a key part of the team all season long. Would have made another diving interception had the play not been penalized, but just a guy that I think is a playmaker. And it was just interesting to me how little North Dakota State appeared like they wanted to use him until the Allison injury occurred.
let's talk a little bit about more about the offense here. Let's start with the offensive line. I know that when you look at their day, they gave over 6.5 yards a carry, 2 rushing touchdowns. Easton Stick was sacked 4 times. But when you kind of look forward, you look beyond to the 2018, do you think like a guy like Colin Connor could potentially kind of shift? Or what do you think that this next year's, you know, offensive line, what do you think it kind of looks like, especially with Dylan Radins coming back into the fold?
Yeah, I think Colin Connor is going to see Peterson in this, you know.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But, you know, 3 tackles for loss, 3 sacks, a forced fumble for Peterson. We talked about him coming into the show, and apparently, you know, he was as advertised, if not more, you know.
For sure. And I just think, number one, more than anything, I think the most talented guard on the roster is Colin Connor. The problem with that is that he's playing left tackle. That was something that probably would have been rectified had Dylan Radins not blown out his knee. But, yeah, I think that 2018 offensive line has a chance to be one of the best that NDSU's had in a long time. Tanner Bolson is an all-conference-level guy at center. Then you're going to be able to have a guy like Luke Bacon team up with a guy like Colin Connor at guard. Right tackle is already there, and Zach Johnson with Dylan Radins moving in at left tackle. These guys aren't going to skip a beat next season, and I think it's something Bison fans should really be excited about. But like I said, I think the most talented guard on the roster is Colin Connor. I think, you know, if Colin Connor wants to potentially play at the next level, it's going to be at guard. So it would be good for him, just from on a personal note, to get some time there. But I really think that the best thing for NDSU is going to be to move Colin Connor. And that's fine. That's not, you know, disrespectful whatsoever. They were in a situation where they didn't have much at left tackle last season. Then this season, you know, had Dylan Radins ready to roar probably. And he blows out a knee, you lose him. Next season, great. He's the backup left tackle again. No problem. But next season, I would love to see Colin Connor at left guard. I think he's a perfect left guard, and I think he'll be an all-conference level guy, and like I said, a potential pro. I really think his ceiling at a guard is that high because of his experience at left tackle, because of his feet, and because of his basically his body composition. I just think he's a prototypical left guard.
And again, we kind of touched on it. Jonathan Peterson is one of the best pass rushers in FCS football. And he put that on display in the Fargo Dome, 3 tackles for loss, 3 sacks, and a forced fumble. I mean, we talked about his maybe small in stature size, but he has – I mean, he's a very, very good player. I guess we'll put it that way. What did you think of Peterson's performance against NDSU on Saturday?
I think you had to be impressed. Like you said, you know, Colin Connor might be slightly out of position as a tackle, but he's still a guy that's – put in huge snaps for North Dakota State at that position. And anytime you can dominate an NDSU offensive lineman and make no bones about it, that's exactly what happened on Saturday. You have to hold your hand high. And I think when you're the FCS's all-time leader in sacks, you probably hold your head high as well. So very impressive from top to bottom from Peterson. There's absolutely no question about it. I was just blown away because I wasn't that impressed with him a season ago, but that's what players do. They develop, and he was a lot better. I really do believe that. I think he was a lot better yesterday than what I saw a season ago, and honestly what kind of had me not as concerned about him going into this game. I was dead wrong.
Final thing I really want to touch on here is R.J. Erzendowski. If you haven't, again, Ross will have his Upon Film review piece up here probably by the time you listen to this, so head on over to the Bison Report to check it out. But, I mean, how many highlight reel catches can R.J. Erzendowski make in a season before someone really, really, really starts to notice? And, again, he's been making these plays throughout his entire career. Do you want to step up on your soapbox a little bit and give R.J. Erzendowski kind of the respect he deserves?
Yeah, I hope people understand, and I think they do. I mean, I think there's a great level of appreciation from the fan base for R.J. Erzendowski. But like I said, I just hope people understand what they're seeing. This is a guy that might have the best hands of any Bison I've ever seen. Zach Fraw was a great hands catcher. Cole Heckendorf was pretty good too. Older fans will remember Timmy Strelo. But just from a standpoint of, you know, being on SportsCenter Top 10 isn't that impressive. But standpoint of catching balls on key downs when it matters, making big plays when it matters, but sprinkling in those spectacular plays and unbelievable plays when you haven't completely separated yourself from the defender, those are important too. And RJ Rzendowski has been just a huge part of this program from the second he stepped on campus. It'll be wild to think of Easton Stick without him. You know, they played together at Creighton Prep. They were of the same class. RJ, you know, because of NSU's wide receiver depth that year, was not able to redshirt. And Stick was because of the presence of Carson Wentz. And so, you know, next year, Easton Stick, for the first time since he's been like 15 years old, is going to have to go through a football season without RJ Rzendowski, and somebody's going to have to step up and be the man. Can Darius Shepherd be the man? We'll find out. Otherwise, you know, it's going to have to be a guy like Christian Watson. It's going to have to be, you know, a guy like Demetri Williams. Somebody is going to have to get better, you know, and take
Someone's
over that.
Someone's going to take a step forward.
Absolutely. No question about it. But more than likely, NDSU has three games left of RJ Rzendowski, so let's enjoy those.
Absolutely. And before we kind of sign off here, I did forget to mention, and Ross brought this up during the game, that NDSU did have a visitor on campus over the weekend. Absolutely worth noting. We already have a story up with him on the Visor Report as well, and that's Illinois grad transfer linebacker Trey Watson. He is the older brother of current redshirting wide receiver Christian Watson. Again, he had a lot of good things to say about the Bison. He loves the big thing with Mr. Watson to note and why he's grad transferring is he wants to win. And he knows NDSU wins, and they win a lot. It obviously helps that his brother is here, but it's going to be a fight for him because he's going to be visiting Maryland this weekend, and I believe he's going to use a couple other visits. So if you want to hear what Trey Watson had to say about his NDSU visit, head on over to thebisonreport.com. But we want to thank you guys for listening once again. We will be back later this week to preview the North Dakota game on Saturday, the Wofford game on Saturday, and kind of get into things a little bit more. So we want to thank you guys for listening once again. If you want to, please head on over to iTunes or Stitcher, whatever your podcasting app is. Please rate and review us and subscribe and tell other Bison fans about this. So we thank you guys for listening, and go Bison.